So why Hagar in Epiphany? I had reached out to Debbie this week on our call, and I said, "Thank God that you don't have electioneering," because I feel like with electioneering, you're kind of forced to feel something that the church tells you to feel, and I don't know that that's the way I feel today, and I don't know that that's the way everybody's feeling, to be honest. The world seems very heavy. You know, we've got economic uncertainty with Trump, as well as communities grappling with the division, and the cries of the oppressed remain as loud as ever. So I called Debbie this morning, and I said, "Hey, I need to know which way to go." I gave her two passages, and she said, "Oh, Hagar's definitely Lydia." So I was happy. So why Hagar? We tend to want to find ourselves in the story we read, and for me, as a white cisgender male, I might most readily identify with Abraham or Isaac, but that's not who I aligned with in this story. So I chose to wrestle with Hagar's narrative because I knew I wouldn't find myself in her shoes, forcing me to look more deeply at the text. Now, a little bit about me, and I think it may be true with many of you. After I left my other church and came up to New York, I was having meetings with my pastor, Pastor Heidi, and she said I had righteous anger. And she said, "How could we not? We live in a world where religion that we claim is often weaponized to hurt others, and so many suffer at the hands of the systems that are meant to care for them." So in today's story of Hagar, we encounter Hagar, Ishmael, her son, cast out by Sarah. Sarah, being the same woman who had exploited, basically sexually trafficked Hagar, now abandons her to the wilderness. But this isn't the first instance of Hagar facing injustice at Sarah's hands. Earlier, when Hagar became pregnant, Sarah mistreated her, driven by her own pain and societal pressures to bear a child. Hagar's story is marked by oppression, betrayal, and exile. But Hagar's story reminds us that many of the stories in the Old Testament are oral traditions, retold generation after generation before ever being written down, like a game of telephone. These stories evolved. Yet even through this retelling, Hagar's story stands as a testimony to resilience and God's faithfulness, not to the powerful, but to the oppressed. In an essay entitled, "Who Was Hagar? Mistress, Divorcee, Exile, or Exploited Worker?" Nicole Simopoulos explored how different groups of women would identify with Hagar. In talking with the women, the Caucasian women who had faced infertility, they saw Hagar as a surrogate, accomplishing what they could not. For divorced women, regardless of color, they connect with Hagar as a woman cast aside for someone else's family. Immigrant women, they saw themselves in Hagar, the refugee, navigating displacement and rejection. And Black South African women recognized Hagar as the exploited worker surviving in unjust systems. These interpretations remind us of the timelessness of Hagar's story and its power to speak to varied experiences of oppression. So where is the hope in Hagar for her and for us? Phyllis Tribble, who I was hoping Liz would be here, knockout for her, a feminist biblical scholar, noted that Hagar is the first woman in the Bible to receive a direct encounter with God. She's also the first to be promised descendants. God says, "Come, lift up the boy and hold him fast with your hand, for I will make a great nation of him." Now think about this for a minute. The scribes who recorded this story, years after it had been told and told, were most likely educated men, working within a patriarchal system of oppression. Yet even within those constraints, they chose to write a story that elevated Hagar, a woman, a slave, an outsider, as the recipient of a divine promise. The act of preserving Hagar's story, then, of showing God's care for her and her son, is a powerful reminder that even in systems built to oppress, acts of defiance, like the writer, and truth-telling can break through. It tells us that God's concern is not for the powerful, but for those cast aside by society. We don't need to look far to see that the wilderness still exists today, and it may get worse. Asylum seekers at the U.S. border wait in limbo, facing uncertainty. Local shelters here, including ours, are overwhelmed. In Afghanistan, women are barred from education and public life, voices silenced. And even closer to home, our unhoused families live on margins, struggling to find dignity in a society that overlooks them. The wilderness takes many forms, but Hagar's story reminds us that God meets people where they are. God met Hagar at her lowest, in the desert, when she thought she had no future. Since moving to New York, I've developed a deep love for live music. Last year, I had the privilege of hearing Ledisi perform the songs of Nina Simone at Carnegie Hall. It was an amazing concert. Halfway through her set, she said, "It's about to get political up in here." And then she sang, "I wish I knew how it would feel to be free." The lyrics resonated deeply with me, and I imagine they would with Hagar. "I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me." Even in her anger and frustration, Hagar's story and the song offers hope. They remind us that freedom, though elusive, is worth pursuing. So as we reflect on Hagar's story, let us remember that God's promises are not for the powerful, and that God is present with those who are cast aside. Hagar reminds us that even in exile, even in that wilderness, there is hope. So I'll leave you with the words of Nina Simone's song. "I wish I could share all the love that's in my heart. Remove all the bars that keep us apart. I wish you could know what it means to be me. Then you'd see and agree that everyone should be free."